David Wolford, and I am here with Mr. Fred Willis. It's the 19th of August, 2002. We are at his home in Louisville, Kentucky. Mr. Willis, would you just kind of give us a bit about your background, where you're from, where you grew up?
Well, I grew up in Columbia, Kentucky. And I was born on the 5th of December, 1938. My parents are Earl and Genevieve Willis. And I went to the old, I guess, Jackman High School there as a grade school student for first of the eighth grade, and then one and a half years of high school before the school burned down for whatever reason. I don't know. It was a four-room frame building, and they had all 12 grades there. When the school burnt, of course, we didn't have a school to go to, and at the time they put us in, we went to school in a house and a church, and I think two of the churches in the community served as schoolhouses, and then there was a house, a dwelling, that served as a schoolhouse for a period of time. I can't recall the dates nor anything, but that's where we went to school there for I guess, or 6 months or something there before the Brown versus Wade, I guess, decision that was before the Supreme Court. And of course, their parents were very instrumental in getting this suit started. And also, there were some white people in Columbia that were very instrumental in this too. The old man, Alvin Lewis, Morris Epperson. These are just a couple of people that I can remember that would call my dad off to the side and encourage him to follow through with this. I can't recall all this, and I wasn't privileged to all of it.
Why do you think those people were supportive of the suit?
I think they were just people who knew the community and were interested in the community to see that we weren't involved in a bunch of stuff like other cities were. I remember it was Sturgis, Kentucky, where they had all the problems. And I think they were very, very concerned that this wouldn't happen to this town. I can't recall all these names. It's just a couple of names that I knew.
Did those same people or others like them, the whites that were supported, did they get together when any kind of meeting happened? Or
I don't know. I really don't know.
You were in high school, young high school at the time.
And I don't know. But my dad was a truck driver, a local driver. So he saw these people every day, you know, and I'm sure that they was called up to the side and said things were said to him that, you know, weren't privileged to anybody else. But I know when we went to school, some of the teachers were very supportive. There was a Miss Rosenbaum that was real good, just very supportive of me.
This is a teacher?
Yes.
This was at the Adair County High School once?
Yes, once we integrated.
Started, okay. How did you feel that support? You know, in what ways was she supportive?
Well, you could tell, and then she would say things to my parents. And then she knew my dad, and that, you know, it wasn't just to rush out and tell him, but when she would see him, she would say things to him. They were very supportive. I know, me being the son of a truck driver, they had us all kind of funnel us into a driver education class. And some of the people were saying that, I mean, some of the people were asking my dad, well, what are they doing your kid in a driver education class when he drives your truck, you know? But this was, you know, I guess it's one of the things I'm just glad to be here. But this was a Quashed Amendment, of course, they put us into agricultural class there, and some of my friends were farmers, but other than that, and I don't know. I did real well until I thought it was grown, and then my grades slacked off, but I was able to finish.
Right. Tell me a little bit more about the Jackman School building.
The best I can remember, it was a four-room building with a auditorium with sliding doors that would close, and you could divide it into classrooms, but when they needed an assembly or something, they can open all these things up and make one big room. It had pot-belly stoves, and of course their deal was to throw the coal through the stove to make it turn red, and but that's what we had to do. We had to stoke with the fire, keep it warm. The teachers, I can't remember. Oh, Miss Wilma Brown, have you talked to her?
No, I haven't.
Okay, now she was instrumental in this suit also. Now she lives here in Louisville.
Wilma Brown?
Yeah. I saw her about 4 months ago at a friend of mine, and I don't know whether she's in the, I'm sure she's in the phone booth.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the teachers I can vaguely remember are old man Shelton. He was from down around Madisonville someplace. And then we had another guy from down that way, Trailer, Professor Trailer. He was from down there around Princeton or someplace. And, of course, my uncle talked there for a while Jackman there before he moved to Louisville.
What's his name?
Robert Ewing. He was a teacher there. And then K.I. Ballmer, now I don't think he ever taught there. He was more out in the outlying areas, out in the rural schools there. And, you know, Columbia's rural, but this was even ruler
yeah.
than Columbia. And he taught out in the rural. And I'm just trying to think of some of these other teachers that we might have had. Or there was another lady. We got a lot of teachers from Louisville. I don't know, Miss Crow. She was a teacher that come down from Louisville also. And but I can't remember the rest of these people. I don't know. For some reason or the other, I seem to think that some of the students, older students, might have acted as teachers or something. Mm-hmm. I can't remember.
Could you, you know, how would you describe your education at Jackman?
Old books, no modern books. We got the hand-me-down books. You know, the books that we used were probably outdated by you know, we were probably the third people that used them, because I'm sure that the white schools got the better books there. And while we're talking about that, I live within a stone's distance of the old Columbia High School. We just lived not very far, and we would walk past the school, and not in a direct proximity, but we would walk within two blocks of this school to go to Jackman. The white kids would ride by on the buses, and we would be walking to school. If we were fortunate enough to have a car, well, the parents would take us, but not many people in that community had a car at the time. You know, we're talking 50 years ago, or 45 at most, because, well, longer than that, because I am going to Columbia to a class reunion at Dare County High in a couple of weeks of the 50th class reunion there. I don't know how long you're going to be there, but we're going to be down there at a class reunion in a couple of weeks. You might want to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
you might be able to get some perspective from some of the white kids. I don't know.
Right, right. Tell me a little bit about your father and how he got involved with this suit.
He was part of the NAACP. He was the president, the local chapter president of the NAACP.
Did he begin the NAACP down there?
Yes, I'm sure he did, because he was a guy that was always outside the community and would go out and come back, because he was a truck driver and he'd come to Louisville 5 days a week, or I guess back then 2 days 1 week, three the next. So he was always going out of the community, coming back. Of course, we were privileged with having a black newspaper, the Pittsburgh Courier, that bought, and the Louisville Defender, that bought us information in. So, you know, we were always privileged to some black newspaper information. And I think just the idea of knowing that we were taxpayers in that town, or he was a taxpayer, and to see his kids have to walk to school, and you know, I guess it just bothered him. It's just a sign of the times, and he didn't particularly care for it. And my dad was a strong man. He's very strong in his beliefs and his Christian beliefs and everything else. And I think this was mostly part of it, that he just believed. He knew it was wrong for us to be getting a substandard education, going to a substandard school, and someone had to step up and do something, and I think he was instrumental in doing it.
You think his job, the fact that he's traveling around, driving the truck, do you think that that had something to do with motivating him a little bit, seeing other places?
I think seeing that, just seeing what was happening in Airtown, and seeing that, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that, hey, you know, if these kids are going to this school, and these kids are going to that school, and they're riding buses, and these kids are walking right past, one group is riding, and one group is walking, but when I see my property tax, my tax are no different from your tax, my tax money is going to support going into the kitty, but you can't put anything back into it. And that's pretty much true today. But I think that was it there. I think it was just the idea. And of course, as this thing, as it moved on, and the encouragement and the progress that was being made, and the stuff that was going on, the things that were going on, that they were able to just really keep this thing going. And then, of course, they got in touch with Crumlin here, because he was, I think he was a state lawyer, the top lawyer for the NAACP in the state of Kentucky. And then this thing began to, because I remember when they went down and they sent it, of course, they had to have a, they couldn't just now, you know, of course, things are coming back to me now as I talk about this, but, you know, they couldn't just file a suit for us to get in. They had to have a confrontation. So they march us out to the school, and then they come out there and read this salary, you know, you can't come in. Well, then that was the beginning of the suit.
When they took you to the school that you had to be turned down in order to file suit.
Yeah.
You know, what was that like? Do you remember those experiences?
Well, no, of course, other than being all the white kids sitting around looking at us like you know, we a couple Mars or something, and other than that, you know, being a youngster like that, being put into a situation like this, it wasn't the best I can remember. It wasn't an ideal situation, because I knew quite a few of these white kids, because I, you know, we lived in a little enclave there, of being the only, well, it was only two black families in my little enclave there, and all our neighbors surrounding were white. So I knew Don Yates and Tommy Hagen and all these guys. When we were small, we played together, but as you know, we grow old, then you go different ways for whatever reason. But you know, these kids used to walk by my house all the time, and you know, as we got older, then you know, when they'd come by, or it was, we would jump on them, or they would try to jump on us, and it was kind of a little rivalry, a little fighting thing. But it was never, you know. And as we got older, of course, all this disappeared too. But We go out there, and I can't remember when we rode. I think maybe the buses refused to pick us up. I'm more than sure that that's what happened. And my parents took us out there, or someone took us out there. I think my father-in-law might have took a bunch of us out there to the school, and I think it was part of Turner's now. But he was a guy that my wife's dad. Now he worked at a store downtown, so you know, worked at Merman's department store. So you know, he was downtown all the time. Everybody in town knew the guy. Of course, in that town, everybody knew everybody anyway. But he was talking buddies with these guys, and and I'm sure that he was getting a little encouragement too from the same group of people to, hey, your kids need an education, they should be out there, there's nothing wrong with these kids going to school together. They play together all summer, so why can't they go to school? Why can't they go to school?
What would you say that on the whole, at this point and before, did blacks and whites tend to play together on the street or in baseball games and stuff like that?
No, not so much.
You were an exception because of where you live,
yeah,
you think?
Yeah, but and then there was other white, other areas where the white people lived, and black kids and white kids kind of lived together and played together. So it wasn't really we realized that there was a difference. And the way that we were treated and different things that happened in everyday life. But, you did. Most kids, not most kids, but quite a few kids play with white. Black kids play with white kids play with black kids.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that paid off when you did finally make it to Adair County High? I mean, was there some whites that were supportive because they knew you before, or?
Well, it's probably like today that secretly or when they would be off by themselves, they would say, oh, yeah, but when they got among, other whites, then it was kind of a standoff deal. But as time went on, there were quite a few guys that, even right now today, I run across some of these guys that I went to school with, and we talk, and there's guys right here, a buddy of mine right here in Louisville, Richard Rogers, I see him, I stopped out there on the interstate and talked to him for an hour one day. There's another guy down there, Bill Blue. Of course, we knew him early on, but even now today, when I go to Columbia and I see Bill, it's a conversation of anything and everything, and just quite a few of these guys that we do. And then there were some guys that were just, overly friendly, I thought, and I can't remember them. I know there's a guy, Sullivan, Thurston Sullivan there, that was just overly friendly. He didn't live in Columbia, but he lived out in the rural area. He was overly friendly. So a lot of people were just, I just thought, real friendly. And it made you suspicious because, I don't know about this guy.
Yeah. What was do you remember the white reaction to the lawsuit?
No, I don't. Being young like that, I didn't really pay that much attention to it, and back again, I didn't see any reprisal against my dad.
He was never threatened, or
if he was, we never knew about it, or nobody ever threatened to burn our house down. My dad went to work every day. Of course, it was, I guess, maybe that the people he worked for didn't live in Columbia, but I don't think that it was. If it was, and until the day he died, he never mentioned anything, any threats or anything.
The story in Adair County is pretty unique in Columbia because of the Jackman School burning down right before the Supreme Court made this decision.
Yeah.
Do you think the black community desired to go to school with whites initially, before that happened?
No, I don't. I don't think it was ever. I don't think it was ever a. Just by, I can't speak because I was just a youngster. But I don't think there was ever a desire to, not that I ever picked up on a desire
sure.
to go to white schools or desire to do this. It could have been, but I never, if it was there, I never saw it, and if it if I saw it, I didn't recognize it, and if I recognize it, I don't remember it. But the best I can figure out is that, you know, I don't think there was ever any desire to go to integrated schools. I don't think it crossed most people's mind. You were privileged with information from the North with these papers, newspapers and everything. And I don't think that anybody ever, I know my dad, at the time he had went to, of course my dad was in the, what they call the 3C camp back in the days, the conservation something, I don't know.
3C. Yeah, the Conservation Civilian Corps?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he, being out in California, and of course they had them all in different units, you know, black and white was in different units. When he come back to Kentucky, he told me about how he was a machinery operator, and they had these data all, the blacks couldn't operate machineries in daylight hours, he had to operate this machinery at night. Well, then he started driving the truck, and he went to Ohio, and of course he had to sleep in a truck stop and kind of a bunk type, you know, he just went in and got him a room there. And he was talking about the black guys and the white guys were sleeping together. Well, this was all, you know, in the same room, in the same building. This was kind of unique to him there. And you know, I'm just a little bitty fellow there, and I remember him talking about this. So, but other than that, there was not much integration, intermingling of the races, other than, you know, maybe kids playing together. Just every once in a while, you hear some black guy and some white woman getting together, and I don't know the white people's reaction to it, but the black people's reaction to it was kind of a mixed thing, you know. I remember my parents, there was this guy named Parker Ewing, he was relations to my mother, and he and some woman from down in Cumberland County got together, and he left his wife, and they wound up going to, of course it was against the law, I guess, in Kentucky then, for blacks and whites to marry, I think, I'm not for sure. But anyway, they wind up going to Massachusetts there, and then he got up there, and of course, things didn't work out for him. So I remember him talking about my dad and a bunch of his friends raised enough money to get him back to Columbia. He had to come back, but then, of course, I guess he had to get up and move on the streets. But I don't think it was if it was a lot of race mixing, it was very, very small.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of a subtle thing, like, you know, today we walk anywhere in this country now and you see it, you know, but back then you didn't see a lot of race mix in this part of the country or anywhere else that I knew of. And now, of course, nobody pays any attention mm-hmm. to it, or I don't know, I guess some people do, but.
Much more accepted now,
yeah.
Right. Why do you think it was a unique situation, the school burned down, and so many students had to attend school in these houses or in
yeah.
churches or whatever. Why do you think the school board was reluctant to go ahead and take the blacks in, you know, at its first opportunity?
I think that there was probably that element out there in society who said, you know, no way, because, you know, even I kind of vaguely remember that. Maybe when the grade school, the high school went first, and I think maybe when the grade school started, that there was a little resistance, a little demonstration. I can't remember now. My younger brothers went to grade school over there, but I think there might have been a little resistance to it, because then you're talking 57 to 60, and I left in 60 going to service. So, you know, I can't remember, but I vaguely remember some people over there maybe going out there standing in front of the school door or something.
When do you think integration would have happened in Columbia or in Adair County if Jackman had not burned down?
I don't think it would have been that long. I really don't there. I think with the ending of the Korean War and the beginning of the Vietnam War, and I just don't, I think maybe 4 years at the most, because I think the people would have gotten fed up with that secondary school, with kids going over there to that building. I don't think it would have been long. I think feasibly, economically, I think it would have been almost impossible for them to maintain that school there. And I just don't think people would have stood for it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the community, I think people like my dad, like my father-in-law, like Irvin Bomer, these people would not have, they would not have stood for it. My dad, like I say, I don't think he would have stood for us to have went out there and went to a school of that caliber without, you know, and I think that there would have been a whole ruckus there, and I think there were people in the community who would have stood up and said, I mean, not only black, white too. I think there was white people in that community who would have stood up and said.
When did you move out? You said you went in the service in 1960. Is that when you left town?
That's when I left town.
And then when did you end up in Louisville?
I ended up in Louisville in 72.
Okay.
I stayed in the service for 8 years, and I worked for the government for four.
And your wife's from Columbia as well?
Mm-hmm.
What's her name? Maiden name?
Taylor. Jean Taylor.
Okay. You know, I guess you've made it back there several times
since. I go all the time. I do. We still have property down there, and we go down there all the time.
How would you describe race relations in that area since?
I think it's just fine there. You know, we, our home place there, my brothers cleaned it off. They go down there and mow it all the time. They got it nice and flat and everything. And we go down there, and, you know, you go up there sometimes a day, and there's black guys and white guys and everybody else sitting around talking, and I'm sure that there's still some animosity there towards black people, and then some animosity towards white people. So it's a two-way street, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You still have this, you know. But overall, that's pretty good. I've always said over my life there that Columbia was very unique. There were lot of good white people in Columbia. A lot of good white people. And you know, I couldn't begin to name these people. And even to this day, even to this very minute, that I see black guys get by with stuff in Columbia that they couldn't get by with nowhere else in the world.
For example?
Just crazy stuff. Just old crazy stuff that you know, that you would think, are you out of here? Have you lost your mind or something? But I do it. And whether it's the law or anything else dealing with it, but for some reason or the other, I thought that Columbia was just a nice place. To me, it's not a nice place to live because I couldn't make a living there. But if I was retired or could live comfortable, I'd live there. My wife don't want to go back, but I'd like to go back there another year, but I don't think she will ever go back. But I'd like to go back because it's laid back, it's easy living.
Small town community.
Small town, yes. You miss when you talk, because my sister still lives there, both my sisters still live there, and my wife's mom, spends some time down there. She lives between, you know, here and down there, and then I have a sister-in-law down there and a host of relatives. But it's a good town. I think it would be a good town to raise your kids in. Like any other town, they have their problems, they have their drug problems and everything else. But if your kids, you know, no different than here, you just got to keep your kids away from it or do your best to anyway. But I don't think the influence down there is any more greater with anything than it is right here. But it's a good thing.
Yeah.